Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
An Erios original.
Great actors have to be willing to look like an idiot. I wasn't able to do that for a long time, and I just wanted to be cool.
The things that feel good are, like, really soft and tender. Mm. Like, that feels really... I think Care right now feels really hot.
It's taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart.
Welcome to The Margaret Show, where we talk to people you know and people you should know. First up, you know her from Criminal Minds and Another Period. Actor Paget Brewster.
Yeah, I'm coming out of the dark.
Oh, yeah, my sleeve is big enough for your dog to climb in it.
Oh, my goodness, she's gone all the way inside. Oh. How magical. That's really magical.
Your coat, I saw you at Bob Hope Airport on the way up to San Francisco Sketchfest.
Oh, really?
And that was the most beautiful coat I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, thank you.
I was watching your coat. You were walking down towards the end of the terminal.
Which you're from San Francisco, too.
No, I lived there for 3 years.
Yes.
I moved there from New York. I lived there from 93 to 96.
Okay.
And I was a bartender, and I ended up doing a talk show that aired at 1:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And it was where I first saw you.
Mm-hmm.
I was in like a bodega.
Uh-huh.
On, it had to be near Bush and Jones in
uh-huh.
1996.
Mm-hmm.
And you were the shop owner, I'm guessing was Korean,
mm-hmm.
and had a TV
mm-hmm.
at the register. And he was watching you do stand up, and you
oh,
were
wow.
imitating your mother,
wow.
and you. But no one had seen a Korean American
mm-hmm.
stand up, as far as I
yeah.
knew.
Yeah,
and somebody was translating for him.
Oh,
I think like a younger female relative, a daughter, mm-hmm. a cousin, a niece, translating. And this guy had to be in his late 60s,
mm-hmm.
was laughing,
oh.
and also so excited. And I've
yeah.
never forgotten that. I just stood in that. Like a deli, and just watched this family watching you.
Oh, that's incredible.
And it was fascinating.
That's
it
amazing.
Was because you were really the first.
I think so, yeah, yeah. But yeah, that was an incredible time. I mean, I think, you know, it's like, I always forget about that, you know, but I think it is impressive for to think about, like, you know, that there being no other Korean Americans or no other Asian Americans in comedy or in entertainment.
Did you not feel that at the time?
I guess I did.
You must have.
I knew that. I think in comedy, I think it's just weird because you get so independent in a way. And it's almost like if you're different, it does help. Like, it's like your individuality
uh-huh.
and standing out is preferable to not.
Got
so
it.
That's always, I think that, I mean, maybe I just thought of like comedy first as being something like to be different was good.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is definitely like something that I felt as an actor coming into acting was very challenging because, you know, you couldn't really, there was never any like Asian American parts in the breakdowns. You
mm-hmm.
didn't know like what you could go out for and stuff. So it was always like this weird thing of like, where do I go? What mm-hmm. do I do? How do you fit in? But it's good. I thought you were here earlier than the 90, like 96. I feel that seems late to me, but I guess,
yeah,
I mean.
I got here in 96.
Wow. Okay.
And I had been bartending in San Francisco and going to acting school.
Yeah.
And,
did you go to ACT?
No, I didn't go anywhere near that fancy. No, I went to Gene Shelton's Actors Lab.
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Oh,
of
you
course.
Know it. Yes, oh, great, of course. Yes. That's where I went.
Awesome.
And then I ended up doing a talk show that was, it was called The Padgett Show. It was on at 1:30 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
We shot 65 episodes.
Was it, what was it on?
It was on KPIX, the CBS station up there.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
And then moved here. Mm-hmm. I got an agent and moved here in 96.
Okay. Then, I remember seeing you at the old Largo.
Yeah.
At the old Largo with on Fairfax.
Yeah.
And that was like a, you know, that was a time when, so we all were friends with Janine Garofalo and like Greg Berendt and all of the people from Mr. Show, David Cross and everybody. And then there was a big article about us in the New York Magazine, New York Times Sunday Supplement. Do you remember that?
No.
Did you get interviewed for that? It was like the weirdest thing because it was like where you're like just friends with people, what? But everybody happened to sort of start to become famous. So they all did like this like big, they did a photo shoot and we were all like friends. And it was like this weird thing where this reporter was like following us. And I was remembering that because you were hanging out with Dave Foley, right?
Yes.
Around that time.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Honestly, I have to go by who was I dating at the time. So it was, I dated Dave Foley for a little while, who's a very good friend now and great. And then I dated Jay Johnston, who was
in Mr. Show. Yeah.
And that's how I met Paul F. Tompkins, who I did a lot of shows at Largo with.
Okay.
But I don't know this article you're talking about.
It's
that must have been 98?
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. But it was like kind of focused around Mr. Show and then peripherally around like Ben Stiller. And then it was like this whole thing of these like young youth Quakers.
Wow. I don't think I had done much at that point.
It was
I don't know if I'd done Friends even at that point. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But it was all that era. It was all that timing and
90s, late 90s.
Late 90s, but it's weird because it's doesn't seem like that long ago, but it is actually a long time.
It is a long time.
It is like to think about. But did you go to like, I know that you must have gone to at least some John Bryan shows
at
Largo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, everyone sort of hung out at Largo, whether you were doing a show or not.
Right.
And it was cozy. Right now, Largo is Largo at the Coronet Theater on La Cienega. It's a big theater.
Yeah, it's very fancy now, yeah.
And then there's the, what's that small room called? Is it called the Little Room? No,
the Little Room in the front?
Yeah, the Little Room in the front is like a smaller venue.
Yeah, yeah.
But the old Largo was like almost the perfect size small club.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just
and
also,
you had to eat.
You had to eat.
And the
was,
food was...
I liked the food.
I only liked that fried chicken
I
with
love
the
that
salad
fried chicken thing.
What
yeah,
was that?
That was really
a good
good
one. I like that.
It was like honey chicken.
Honey chicken. That's
it
what
was
it
so
was.
So delicious.
That was the only thing I ate there.
I ate that a lot.
I ate that.
I love that. But then you got to see all sorts of great people play because John would invite people. And do you remember when Elvis Costello came?
No.
That was a very big deal.
No, I don't think I was there that night.
That was a very big deal. Everybody was like, couldn't even breathe because we were like, oh my God.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So like, this is like the ultimate. But yeah, that was an interesting time. But the way that I know what you were doing, because you were very much an actor. I mean, you got to be on Friends, so you got to be on ground zero of the excitement.
Yeah, that was great. That was my first, you know, sort of my first job in
how
LA,
exciting.
I think.
That's so exciting. So how did you get, do you audition for that?
I auditioned for it, and Matthew Perry was in the room when I auditioned for it, and there were actresses waiting, you know, we were all waiting in that hallway.
Yeah.
Radford, or where did they shoot? At Warner Brothers. Tony Sepulveda's casting office. And I recognized a couple of the women. So I was like, well, I'm not going to get this.
Yeah.
And I came in to audition and was so surprised that he was there because that hadn't been my auditioning experience at all.
Yeah.
That I said, I guess I'm your runty alternate, so we should probably get this show on the road. And they later said, like, that was it. That was when you had the job. And
that's great.
Did it with Matthew, and he was really lovely and generous and kind. Yeah. And I had a great time. They were in a great place at that time, mm-hmm. but they had also just sort of entered the phase where they were so famous. Mm-hmm. That it was, they were struggling with how invasive the world was becoming. And this is pre-social media.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's very different.
That
yeah.
they just suddenly were dealing with a world that had changed dramatically.
Right.
And they sort of were bound together in this kind of survival monkey group. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. So it was an interesting time to be there. Mm-hmm. And they knew they had a mole on the set mm-hmm. who was... like selling stories to tabloids.
Wow. Yeah, and, yeah, yeah.
But they didn't know who the mole was. Uh-huh. And it was, they were great, but there was also that tension of their struggling with mm-hmm. such a change in how their lives were.
Yeah. I mean, because that was like, I mean, the time where it really was about, like, the tabloids were like dangerous and they were spying on you or making things up entirely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it's a different kind of show business. It's not, show business now is very different. It's very segmented. There's a lot of different factions and there's a lot of people that you would never even know about that know about, you know, like they have very specific audiences mm-hmm. and stuff. So, but Friends was sort of like this big, big, big shift in celebrity and everybody on that show became so famous and that show itself became so famous.
Yeah.
Did you feel that like when you were on set, were there people like waiting outside or anything like that? Like paparazzi?
No, not that I was aware of. We were on the Warner Brothers lot and they had to crack down. And one of the guards at the guard booth told me that they had had a lot of threats from a violent stalker about Jennifer Aniston. So they were cracking down on anyone coming onto the lot because they were sort of all on high alert.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone, Lisa Kudrow, came into work one morning and came into hair and makeup and just started crying. Mm-hmm. And I was just a guest star and just trying to keep my head down and keep my mouth shut and, you know, not get fired. So I was mm-hmm. like, should I go? And she was like, no, it's fine. But someone in her gynecologist's office had sold the information to the Inquirer or something.
Oh my God.
That she was pregnant, but it was before her first trimester. I don't have kids, so I don't know. You know what I mean? You don't tell anyone.
Right.
Her family didn't know. So they had to set up an interview. She had to set up an interview with Entertainment Tonight that day during the workday mm-hmm. to announce that she was pregnant, but she hadn't even told her family yet. She didn't know if she was going to get through the first trimester, and right. that's just a really and really horrible position to be
yeah,
in.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And that was pretty profound to see, you know, a woman struggling with that situation that mm-hmm. that her a nurse sold information like that's mm-hmm. just so shitty.
Yeah, I mean that's really crazy.
Yeah, and I feel like the world maybe has gotten worse since just because there's such a 24-hour news feed or
it has to be fed all
dumb
the time.
Gossip feed and social media and just everyone has a camera and there's just no privacy for anyone anymore mm-hmm. and. Mm-hmm. It's probably gotten worse. At the time, that was kind of shocking. That she was devastated that she had to, because she knew if she miscarried, mm-hmm. and there's a high percentage of miscarriages after a certain age.
Yeah, of course.
She would have to announce that. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer a family matter or a private matter or, you know, mm-hmm. It was a lousy position to be in. And yeah. I felt really bad for her.
That sucks. God. It's like definitely a different time. Like show business has so changed. And I mean, since then and things have changed, you know, what television's changed a lot. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think the peak TV really started with Huff.
Oh, really?
I love that show.
Oh, my God. That's nice.
I really loved that show. And I was really upset when it didn't keep going.
Yeah.
Like, what was going to happen? I was, like, really riveted. And it was, for me, that was, like, the first show I remember actually, like, binge watching.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was so great. It was so great. You were so great on it.
Thank you.
You're so
that
great.
That was
on
my
it.
First like dramatic part mm-hmm. that I'd gotten.
Really
but
that cool.
You sort of look at it and realize all of the people that Bob Lowry, our executive producer, cast, were all sort of known for comedy. Mm-hmm. Blythe Danner and Oliver Platt
That's
and
true.
Hank Azaria.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was.
But it made sense because.
Andy Como. Everyone yeah. had a comedy background.
Yeah.
In a drama of a family, like, kind of falling apart.
But that's the beauty of it. And that's what makes sense is that people that can do comedy really have a very, very deep understanding of drama. Because comedy really is drama. I mean, it's just sped up or something. But you need. You need
that is
more.
Astute. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah, you need more in your metal to do comedy. And so drama is going to be, not that it's easy, but it is definitely something that you have the chops for already. You know?
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Comedy can be far more difficult, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm not great at the struggling, crying. I know so many actresses who can cry.
Mm-hmm.
Even doing terrible material, and I can't do that. So drama is hard for me, but comedy can be terrifying.
Yeah,
because what's required of you is a harder feat.
Yeah, because it's like what's required of you as to do comedy is kind of like you have to bring forth an honesty that is. Not just real, but it's unique. You know, it's like something that like you have to figure out where the humanity is. Something it's hard to do comedy because it's like you have to figure out the truth of something that isn't so obvious to display. Mm-hmm. It's very. I think the playing a comedy as an actor is really tough because it's.
I agree.
So much.
You have more experience than I do, and I would like to listen to your thoughts. On how to do it.
When I do drama, if I have to cry, I just have them blow that menthol in my face.
I know. Doesn't it give you a headache, though?
Sometimes, but, you know, it's like kind of like, well, I'm used to it. Like, whatever. I'd rather just have the help.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, no. I'm all for it. I have my own menthol stick.
Mm-hmm.
Do you
mm-hmm.
have that? It looks like a concealer.
Yeah.
And you can just keep it in your sleeve and wipe
it
under your eye, and it's still menthol. But now I kind of feel like if... And listen, I was lucky enough. I was on a CBS show for 10 years
mm-hmm.
called Criminal Minds. Mm-hmm. I saved that money. I now am in a place where for a couple of years, I just want to do things I really want to do.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, oh God, I got to grind. I got to get a job. I got to do anything. It doesn't matter what it is. So now if I'm reading something and it's a drama and it doesn't make me cry, why go in for that?
Mm-hmm.
Why would I go in for that? If it requires me to be... The material better be good enough to get me there or it's not going to happen.
Right. That's good.
So, well, for like another year and a half.
I mean, what a great...
Then I might get terrified and desperate and take a show that I don't respect.
But what a great thing to have to be able to do. Like, you know, it's that you only have to, like, do material that you respond to emotionally.
I'm hoping that it...
That's good.
I'm hoping.
That's good.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Will you tell me about doing Celebrity Wife Swap?
Yes, of course,
please.
It's so fun. It's I was staying with Holly
Robinson
Pete's
family.
We're such a beautiful family, and they are so just lovely and
great, sweet
and kind. And they don't actually. Well, you don't actually live there. What they do is they put you up at the Sheraton in Universal City.
What?
And so. I think she was there at that same hotel, too. So she came here, and I was
this
there.
This maybe is part of Celebrity, though, right?
Yeah.
So for the regular wife swap, they're
living. I think regular wife swap,
okay,
you
got
live
it.
With
all right, got it.
If a regular wife swap, they do definitely, like, live there.
Okay, great. Keep going, please.
But for us...
Because I watch them all, and I love them, and I think it's such a touching, incredible show.
Is.
I loved it. And
it is.
Selena Luna, thank you.
Yeah.
I've never gotten her name. I took photos of her from Lucha when I would photograph
Lucha Baboom.
So keep talking about the show because it was. If you haven't seen it,
it's so
anyone
funny.
Listening
it's
to this
so
podcast,
ridiculous.
You have to. You can buy it. You go on Apple TV. Mm-hmm. It's like $1.99 an episode. Get the Celebrity Wife Swap.
It's so funny
because it's a great. It
it's
was
a great,
great
show.
I loved it, and she rolled with. Your friends and family. Yeah. And that's what, but go, you but talk, so, you talk.
I just, Selene was like here, and then, so I wasn't married. So Selene was just my sort of by proxy wife. And so she had Holly come here to this house, and this house was a real mess at that point. You know, I was like really like just slovenly and like a hoarder, and I hadn't Mary Kondo'd anything. It was disgusting.
It wasn't disgusting. It's not disgusting. Well, it's very, very artistic.
It's very artistic.
Opposite of the, you know,
yeah,
very free spirited.
Yes. But they have a very organized, very clean, very beautiful house that, you know, it runs efficiently. Mm-hmm. Mine doesn't really need to run efficiently because I don't have children, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
But
I don't have kids either. Our house does not run efficiently.
Yeah, it doesn't. It
we don't
doesn't
need to.
Have to. You know, there's no need for any of that. I don't have to take anybody to any kind of practice.
Right.
Of anything. And so it was different. But Holly really had such a good time here, and she really, my parents fell in love with her. They did not want me back at all, and they really loved they loved her so much, and they really. They were so grateful to have her here, you know, and she just cleaned everything, and she was completely like organized and wanted to organize it all. And that was amazing. And then going over to their house, I took Rodney to my friend's dungeon to give him some sex tips on keeping
the
passion
alive.
Yeah. In their marriage.
That was a great idea.
Which was a lot of fun. And, you know, Rodney's great. He's great. Their kids were just, I could not stop with them. They were so beautiful. And it really made me really very sad that I did not have children myself.
Oh, wow.
Because they were just so amazing. They were just beautiful kids. And, you know, what a remarkable family. And I think, you know, they just... I think that they're just so special, and they're just we were interesting kind of like people to swap, because you wouldn't think of us as actually that opposite, but there was a lot of things that were really complementary.
Mm-hmm.
There were things on the outside that seemed sort of opposite, sort of like the neatness thing and organization, but there was just a lot of beauty there. So I really appreciated that show. It's weird how you would think like, well, reality television is, you know, sort of empty, but it's actually quite meaningful and very thoughtful the way they put it together.
I love that show.
I love
and
that show.
And I believe in the truth of it.
Mm-hmm. There's like, so much truth in it.
And I think it's just fascinating to see people who are so completely who they are, sort of not suffering, but there's like, it's challenging to be asked to live a different way, because it's so easy to get insulated in your world and your way of doing things, and and it's a fascinating concept that people switch places, and everyone sort of sees their own life through someone else's eyes, and then wonders, oh, maybe this would be beneficial for us. Like, that's fascinating to me about human behavior, and I think that show is great.
It's really great. It's really
what
good.
Else do you watch? Do you watch reality TV?
I don't watch that much. I guess.
Would you do? Would you be? Would you be like a guest judge on Beat Bobby Flay or Iron Chef?
Yeah,
have you done any of those?
I've done Beat Bobby Flay.
You did?
I've done that. Where I got to judge that
the first part. So it's you and someone else, and you're like, "We're gonna beat you, Bobby."
Yes.
Okay. Great.
Oh, I didn't cook on it, but I ate the food.
Right. The judge for the first round for the two guys or women, or the two people who are going up against each other, and then whoever wins that round then goes on to try to beat Bobby Flay.
Yes.
And you judge the first. Do you remember what it was?
I remember that it was something like probably like some kind of a beef medallions kind
of
thing.
Okay. Because he gives them an ingredient.
Yeah. I don't remember the ingredient, but it was tasty. And then we got, it was me and Ted Allen.
Oh, nice.
From
Chopped,
who is the best. I love him. So we ate a lot, and it was really fun. I also love doing bizarre foods.
With Andrew Zimmern. Yeah.
That would have been a great one to do. Or, you know what would be great to do is Anthony Bourdain's job.
Oh.
That's great. I mean, I imagine it's tough, but what a great thing to be able to travel the world and
incredible. And use your writing. I watch those over and over they're beautiful. And over again.
It's so beautiful, and it's sad, you know, that we don't have him around, because he really created a kind of programming that was really memorable, and mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody could actually just step in and do that, you know, in
no.
the same way.
But there was a part, I think. And I didn't notice it until after he took his life. He mentions it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He mentions all the time killing himself mm-hmm. or hanging himself in the bathroom. I mean, mm-hmm. actually says it. And this is someone who was an admitted, you know, junkie
mm-hmm.
and his sort of bad boy chef. It's true. The guy was like a chef in New York City, and mm-hmm. all of his books are very honest.
Mm-hmm.
about what he did and what he went through, and that he was damaged, and that he could only make his life in that circus.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been so upset by the death of someone I've never met ever in my life.
Yeah.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like my friend was gone. It took me months to be able to watch those shows again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like that's this comforting thing that I like to have on all the time. It'll just mm-hmm. roll over into the next Uruguay, and then it rolls over into Naples, and I love it.
Yeah.
And I feel like you get history and the people and the art mm-hmm. and the food, and I was so bummed out.
I know.
And it's just so tragic, but I don't live with depression. I don't know what that's like.
Mm.
I don't know what it's like to get into the mind space where you think, "Oh, this is going to answer everything."
Right.
If I just do this, everyone else will be better off.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Yeah. I think everyone should have some me. I'm kidding. I don't mean that.
But you're lucky. It's definitely something
I haven't had that, and I'm glad. Yeah. And I hope I never will, because it's...
Yeah.
Just seems awful.
It's weird. It's something that you know, I've had it. It's mostly you have to sort of take measures to not do that, whether that is like medication. For me, it's like I have to, you know, exercise and, you know, do things that I don't really like, but mm-hmm. I just do it because it's actually like, oh, this is actually the only thing that really helps. But it's certainly like, it is a burden. And especially if you're traveling and you're not sleeping and you're like, you know, just on this very punishing schedule.
Oh, God, that could just exacerbate everything that you're trying to keep in check.
Then it's really... So there's something, there's a kind of a hopelessness about being in a hotel room and like so tired and knowing that you can't really rest. It's like, you know, I can see why.
It's that would similar be. To stand-up, I'm guessing.
Yeah,
just
similar.
Touring like that. If you're in a different place every night,
mm-hmm.
again, I haven't done that either. So I don't know what that's like. And I don't know how people do it.
Yeah. Or if people like are looking to you to find a way to enjoy their lives, which I think that for him, it was kind of like he was trying to point the way to like joy for people.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and so when you're that job, then that's like, where do you find your joy? Like, where is your relief there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think with like Andrew Zimmern, he's very, you know, he is like a sober guy. He lives a very, like, very positive life and, you know, takes measures to kind of like keep that in check. But I don't think that Anthony Bourdain was the same way. I don't know. But it is sad.
Yeah.
But but when we're talking about reality shows, that would be the best reality job, I think.
It's the the best
world.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't do the travel. I couldn't do like doing a stand-up thing, going from city to city. I couldn't
mm-hmm.
do it.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do traveling that much.
It's hard.
I don't travel that much.
Uh-huh.
Because I mean I'm just a homebody.
Well, it's a weird thing. I think it's like if you do it, you just sort of know that's sort of the thing. I mean, as you've known stand-up, so they all sort of know, like, that's just a part of who they are. That's the part they have to do,
mm-hmm.
I think. And then there's, like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of us who feel like if we didn't do it, we wouldn't know what to do with our lives.
Mm-hmm. But I think some people think, oh, anyone could do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't do it, or you don't know actual working comics...
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people feel like, well, I could get up on stage and do, I could do that. And I think it just takes years. Yeah. And you have to fail in front of people alone and be heckled. And like, you have to find your, I've always been immensely impressed by comics.
That's
because
good.
It's so hard.
It is hard, but it's something that like, I have never gotten to the point of saying, I'm not doing this. Like I have with acting. With acting, I'm like...
You've had moments where you're
like,
fuck
it. With
acting,
I'm like, I'm not doing this.
Tell me.
Like, just in general, like, the grind of rejection and, like, completely, like, working something out and trying as hard as you could and then they just don't want it or you're getting... Like, you know, it's like...
Right.
You're not... You just don't understand or you can't... Like, cannot learn a line to, like, save your life. Like, there's some things in acting that I just come against these walls that I'm like, I don't even know how we could... get through this.
Wow.
It's a weird thing. Like I, and I've never reached that impasse with comedy, but I do it quite often with acting. Like I'm like, I don't know how to do, I can't.
Where are you right now?
I'm in a good place. I just sort of started to really try in different ways. And there's some things that help, like, you know, getting coaching and, you know, getting like different perspectives on things. So that helps. But I always have to look for new solutions to keep my sort of head in the game around acting.
Wow.
Do you ever do that? Do you ever do like classes or do anything like, did you do that before?
I did, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I did. I took plenty of classes.
Oh, that's right. And Gene Shelton.
I did Gene Shelton in San Francisco. And then here I did, it was called Third Street Theater. It was, I can't remember his name right now, the teacher. And then I did improv classes and at comedy. I studied with Dave Rozowski, Evan Gore, Chris Barnes for improv. And that was actually helped acting. I believe that helped my acting more than most of the acting classes. Like strictly dramatic scene partner.
Yeah.
Put up a, because in improv, I learned don't try to be funny. If you try to be funny, it's not going to work.
Right.
You just have to be truthful because it's what's true about a situation or a person that ends up being funny. So if you, and I think I thought, oh, I'm supposed to, it's so embarrassing. I'm supposed to get up here and be funny, you know, and just that lousy, you know, when people are trying to be funny.
Yeah, yeah, it's
and
worse.
They're pushing it.
Yeah.
And they're, it's not funny and it feels false.
Right.
And there's nothing true about what they're doing. They're just doing a wacky voice or they're and it's hiding.
Yeah.
Because they're unwilling or ignorant to the need for honesty. And I thought that was really fascinating because I think it's really easy also to, if you're scared of being honest or vulnerable, there's a way to hide in acting where you're just, you're not going to give in all the way. And it's, and I've seen people who do it and they're serviceable. They'll, if they're beautiful, they'll keep working. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not good. But there are a lot of people who are attractive enough that they will always work, but they, great actors have to be willing to look like an idiot or a loser or, you know, just vulnerable. And I think I wasn't able to do that for a long time and I just wanted to be cool because I was so afraid of, you know, if you really lay yourself open, you can be attacked for the essence of who you are. And that was scary. So I just kind of, I could memorize lines and, but I wouldn't really, you know, I could live without it. Like trying to be cool and it doesn't, it's no good. It's not interesting. Nobody wants to watch that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was an interesting thing to learn. And I think improv class taught that. And I know incredible improvisers and it's the same thing. It takes years and years to be able to access that, the speed and the integrity, like to trust that if you just answer whatever the situation is with your scene partner, that it's going to work. It doesn't have to be funny.
Yeah.
Just move it forward.
So it's hard. It's hard
very
to access
hard.
That freedom to do it. Because we're just under so many constraints, like just mentally. So yeah, improvisers who are really good, it's like this freedom of the mind where they could do anything.
It's incredible.
It is incredible.
Last night, I did Gravid Waters, which is a show at UCB. Mm-hmm. The idea is one actor and one improviser are paired. Mm. The actor learns one side of a scene. Mm-hmm. And the improviser is just winging it. Mm. And the actor has to say the next line no matter what the improviser does. So it's really hard. Mm. And it can be brilliant. It can end up working really well.
Yeah.
But it's a really hard tightrope. So I was the actor and I did a scene and I just had to keep saying the next line no matter what.
Yeah.
And the improviser, her name was Tara. I can't remember her last name. I was so bad with names. But there were other scene partners last night that were just on fire. Mm-hmm. Like when it works, and I guess that's improv, when it works, it can be painful.
Yeah.
It can go nowhere and it's no one's fault. It's a bad night. It just didn't work. You tried something, whatever. Mm-hmm. But when it works incredibly well, it is watching a magic trick.
Yeah.
It's lightning in a bottle and it's shocking and exciting. And
I want to see you. Where can people find out about when you would be doing stuff like that? I want to come see you.
Oh, I don't know.
I have
a Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm so bad about it,
though. Do you put it up on your socials or?
I do. My friend Arden Marine has a podcast about The Bachelor that we do often. I put that up. I'm at Paget Graham for Instagram, mm-hmm. at Paget for Twitter.
Thank you so much for joining
me
today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
And now, my conversation with the incredible actor, creator, Poppy Liu. I was listening to this old animal song from the 60s called San Franciscan Nights. And it's all about a warm San Francisco night. And I'm like, you've never been to San Francisco
because
it's never been warm. It's fucking cold all the time and cold at night, especially.
Oh, yeah. You were in SF because like all like the like leather scene mm-hmm. stuff was like
yes.
mainly SF
the
leather
queerness,
scene, right?
My queerness, my BDSM roots are all San Francisco. Uh-huh. And I saw you on my favorite Reddit, Lady Boners.
Oh.
Which is a really good Reddit. It's women for women.
What is
this Reddit? It's Reddit. It's like sexy pictures of women that women like. That women Ooh. Women get a lady boner for.
What were the photos on there? Were they Mistress Yin stuff?
No. It was just, I think it was like maybe like a press junket or something, but you just look really, really pretty. Aww. So I was like, oh, yeah, totally.
You know what I found recently? I wonder, you probably have a profile on this too. WikiFeet.
Yes.
Yeah?
Okay. I'm a 4.5 on WikiFeet.
Oh, you're so lucky. I'm a 4.
What? Why?
I know. I felt like mad about it afterwards.
I'm like, what? You would have, I mean, what's going on?
I know. I have a great arch on my foot.
Yeah, that's the most of it. That's,
yes.
That's the biggest like thing that they notice.
Yes. My toes are like kind of like, they're like, I don't know, they're like little cute grapes, which I think is cute.
Do you not wear enough sandals?
Maybe. I think that's what it was.
It's
I think
probably because
like,
I can't see your feet. That's
all
probably
the photos
what it is.
On there are ones where like, it's like an Instagram photo where it's like not about my feet.
It's a closed
like,
toe.
You know, like you can zoom in and be like, okay, I guess there's a foot in the picture.
Well, there's like a thing of like, if you don't see the foot a lot, I think maybe they won't acknowledge it. But like the only person with like a 5-star is Kylie Minogue.
Really?
That's and she does wear a lot of sandals.
Huh.
So
does she have a beautiful feet, or do you think that it's like always adorned in a beautiful sandal?
Both. Huh. I think she knows she has beautiful feet, yeah, and they're always in a beautiful sandal. So there's, you know, I think she's like kind of.
I do not wear beautiful sandals.
For the
That's
audience.
Definitely not me.
Yeah, I don't really.
I mean, like,
either.
I'm like wearing like chunky these. White hospital tennis shoes.
No, these are good. These are very e-girl. Like, these are, you're giving me e-girl today with your TikTok. Like, yeah. It's perfect. I like to do the e-girl look with a collar or like a choker because it hides my neck wrinkles. It's a perfect place to hide your age is to put like a choker on it. So it's not, I'm not really bottom. I'm just old. I'm like over 50. So I need to put something, but I like that. I like a choker look anyway. And so BDSM fashion works for me with a choker.
For sure. I like that too. I feel like for me, it just like also feels like, I don't know if it's like an SM thing or if it just is like it feels like a, like something around my neck in this tight way feels like a hug.
It's reassuring.
It just feels like I feel less naked.
Yeah, it's a really small thunder shirt. Uh-huh. It's like something that's sort of like an assurance. And but it's also a mixed metaphor, too, because I think of you as a dominant.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't necessarily.
You know what? I think I'm very switchy, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think
is
I'm very switchy.
Is that new or is that you're just discovering that now or was before?
I think I don't know. It really goes back and forth. I think maybe more recently I'm coming to terms that like with the fact that I'm switchy, mm-hmm. but I think in different like relationships, different sides of it come out.
Yeah.
And so there will be an extensive phase where I'm only sort of in a kind of like dom place and that's the relationships I'm calling in. And then like that'll change, like I will change and then I'll feel like, okay, I gotta like change up what's happening in my love life right now.
Oh, okay.
Like that's like that's the I don't know where the tracks veer.
I think that like
are you dommy? Are you subby? Are
I'm
you
subby. I'm uh-huh. I'm lifetime sub and I'm trying to be switchy, but it's really so hard for me to because it's not natural to my being.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so being switchy for me takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And
sure.
I really don't. I'm kind of at a loss all the time because I'm not like, I'm just not inspired to do it. It doesn't turn me on to be dominant. So that's where I have to really kind of go outside myself and go, what would this person like? Or what would I like if I was a sub, which I am a sub. So it's kind of like, I kind of don't know what to do, but I want to like affect that because I do think that it's just better if older women are dominant. It's dignified. And we have the experience to do so. And most of the doms I know spent a long time as subs.
Interesting.
You know, and then switched over. And like my favorite doms have always been older women. So it's like I do want to like lean into that eventuality. But I'm resistant to it because I'm just a lifelong bottom.
Sure. Maybe that'll just happen though with time.
Maybe. The relationships I have now, I have two relationships with women that are pain only.
Mm-hmm.
Which I really love.
Mm-hmm.
And so one is my age and one is much, much younger. And then I have a conventional vanilla bae, a guy who I love, but it's different.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, so I feel very happy with my like erotic potential being realized. The one element that's gone is dom. Mm. Like so that part I need to figure out.
Yeah, dom is tricky though, because I feel like even when I'm in a dommy phase, I think of myself as a lazy dom.
Mm.
Like I even when I feel dommy, I feel really lazy. Mm. And so I kind of need like a very bossy bottom be like, do this, or like, I need someone else to like, which is interesting because like that's like another power dynamic too, but I'm just like lazy as a dom.
Yeah.
But like still want to be in a dommy place.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I'm a lazy bottom too though. I think I'm just lazy a little bit. Yeah.
That's okay.
I'm like, yeah, I think like my bottom identity is very much like a princess bottom.
Well, it's like you like surrender and that's really an important element of sexuality for anyone. And so that's sort of like if you're, it's not lazy. What it is, you like to fall.
Mm-hmm.
And so to fall into it,
way of putting it
is actually quite, it's very beautiful. And it's like the surrender and release. So as opposed to catch, your release. Mm-hmm. So that's a good place to be. Hmm. So it doesn't have to be framed as lazy.
Yeah.
You know, you just like
to fall
into
it. I don't think of lazy as a negative thing, though, too.
No, that's okay.
I like, yeah, that's fine. You know, I love a lazy. I love a lazy anything.
Yeah, but lazy is a slur if you're Asian American.
For sure, yeah.
It's like a very,
you know,
like,
what's interesting,
thing.
Though? Because I have, like, noticed a lot of my, like, I don't know, like, API queer communities, maybe not necessarily with, like, the term lazy itself, but there's been a lot of, like, interesting reclaiming of... just like of rest, of like non-working.
Oh, good.
Of like my friend and roommate, Uncle Sandy, like had these shirts that are just called the like, I think it's just called like the Not Working Club.
Oh, yeah.
And just like had that like for a while. I actually don't know where the shirts came from, but just like this idea of being like, yeah, part of our like socialized cultural makeup, you know, under like white supremacy, et cetera, is like your value is like your work.
Right.
And even like the myth of the, like the model minority, everything is based on like, these are the good workers. These are the good immigrants. These are the good people, right, of color, et cetera. And so like, I think part of the narrative of undoing that is like, interestingly, this like embracing of laziness, or yeah, this being like, actually, like, am I a good worker? I don't know. I don't think so. Like,
well, it's great to, you know, not have to be, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I think like, what a great thing is, you know, not hustling.
Mm-hmm.
Not hustling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing it. And that's a great thing. Just to, yeah, like, not have to.
Yeah.
Because busyness is not worth. But for sure. People always confuse that.
For sure. I actually, earlier this morning even, I had to answer these questions for, like, a press something. And one of the questions was, like, what are you excited for in this year? And it wasn't necessarily like a leading question of like, what are you career wise? But like, I think it was kind of insinuated, mm-hmm, of like, what's coming up next that like you're excited about? And I was just like, I don't want to answer like that. And I was like, I'm excited that I got my sister a puppy. I'm excited that my like mental health is popping right now.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm excited that I figured out like a good balance for like work, family, community, mm-hmm, myself, time. And I was like, yeah, those are like, that's actually what I'm measuring right now.
That's good.
Of like, what is exciting for me?
That's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, like, this year with the work was about, like, erotic potential.
Ooh.
And maximizing erotic,
ooh,
potential.
I just got shivers.
Yeah.
I love that. It's very,
that's
juicy.
An important thing to do because I ignored it for so long. Mm. And I was in sexless marriages forever. Mm. And so this is the first time I've been single, quote unquote single, in the age of apps and able to freely, mm, investigate and not to have to be a monogamous to anyone and not to have to be covert or hiding, mm-hmm, about anything. So that's really good. And it's gone really well. And I think that that is really important. So then when you're here, mm-hmm, then do you feel like you can sort of be free or like find other partners or, you know, have encounters?
I do. I think right now what feels really juicy for me is having crushes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's good.
I love having a really intense crush. Mm-hmm. And I like kind of almost don't like it after it gets past their crush phase.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I'm definitely in that place right now.
Yeah.
Like crushes is my version of like edge play at the moment. I love it. Everything is edge play to me.
It is total edge play. And yeah, crushes are great because it's like it doesn't have to exist anywhere outside of your mind.
Yeah.
Which I think is great.
Because it's almost like you're in a relationship with yourself.
That's great.
It's just like your own brain and your little fantasy land.
It's so fun.
It's so fun.
And it's so fun to discover. And I get burnt out on crushes because it's like I need it to be kind of tended to by the other person if, uh-huh, it's going to like continue to grow.
Sure.
But I have them. Yeah, there, it's like a very, I think it is definitely playful.
Yeah.
And adolescent, which in a good way.
Do you ever tell your crushes that you have crushes on them?
I have. And then that's kind of thing, it's usually turns into a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Which then I kind of know the inevitability of. If I can manipulate that into happening, I will. But it's sort of like, I don't know if I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I had a crush on, the last crush I probably, really bad crush I had was on a guy that was, he's at my trainer at my gym.
Uh-huh.
And he is so goddamn gorgeous. And it's like, I just knew, like, I wasn't going to, it encroach it at the gym, because then if anything weird happened, I wouldn't go.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I gotta not even say anything. Uh-huh. But then I was like subconsciously looking for him on dating apps, because I knew that I would probably see him on something. Uh-huh. But I haven't yet. But then I deleted all my apps. But I just kept thinking, oh, I'm probably, if
you
I
didn't know if he was dating.
I think so. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, I could, I had that sense, and yet I didn't want to approach it in the gym context, because I knew, like, if I get something weird, or if he's not what I want,
for sure,
I'm not going to
yeah.
go out of the gym.
What do you think is drawn? Like, what's the what makes you have a crush on somebody?
I think it's a combination of things. It really depends. I think for him, it was a kind of mastery over his body that was not vain, but it mm-hmm. was also like, it was like he cared for his body as if he'd been an athlete, which I probably think he was.
Ooh.
Like a professional athlete at some point.
Ooh.
And so it was like a very different kind of, and it was a hyper masculinity that I'm not privy to in any context mm-hmm. at all. So that there was some bit of a tourism aspect uh-huh. of like, what if I was a basketball wife? Like, it was kind of like,
ooh.
This, like, I'm playing with this kind of like persona of being married into maybe like a Kardashian or something, being married uh-huh. into the sports thing.
I could see you could definitely be a Kris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Like
that
your
kind
little
of thing.
Kardashian empire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like a mumager. And
yeah.
That would be fun. But there's like, yeah. So that, I think that the element of like, it's this whole world that I couldn't even imagine,
uh-huh.
but it seems fun. It seems like heterosexual, like playtime, like a fun fantasy playtime. Uh-huh. I'm just not involved in that kind of a world.
Right. What about your like Bill Hader crush?
Well, that's just because he's so ridiculously funny in like ways that I can't really always explain that uh-huh. I always get into, and like all of his impressions of the MSNBC correspondents.
Uh-huh. So it's like a talent admiration crush.
Yeah, definitely. And also Fred Armisen too, that same kind of thing. I just want to watch them. Uh-huh. They're just funny to me.
Yeah.
And just cute. So I think that's where the crushes are. Like those are from a different thing.
I think for sure, like for me, seeing someone, it doesn't even matter what their work is, but seeing someone doing their work and them loving their work and being good at it is really hot.
It is hot.
But that's also the Capricorn in me that I'm like, oh yes, chef. Like,
ooh.
Tell me about how much you love Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, it's like, ooh, you better roast it. It's like turn on that sous vide and slowly heat it through.
Like, ooh, cars? Like, get under my trunk.
I like that. Yeah, I love femininity in a masculine man and masculinity in a feminine woman.
Definitely. I love masculinity in a feminine woman.
Yeah.
Like, that is just like all day, every day.
Beautiful.
But you know what's interesting is the more that I read about like recent Chinese history of the last 50 years and stuff, and reading about just like cultural revolution and like everything there, the way that people describe sort of their comrades, especially like women comrades, is so lesbian.
Yeah.
It's 100% lesbian.
Yeah.
You know, or it's like the admirable qualities of like of the time that were sort of the government propaganda of what it means to be like a good like comrade in the communist movement. It was just all of this like very, very queer rhetoric, actually. Mm. Which is really interesting.
It is, to think about it, because it's like, is really unaware about queerness.
Oh, and also like very, very, very homophobic and very, very, very transphobic.
Right.
Simultaneously. And also I have this theory that like everyone who is my mother's age who grew up in China is like a queer person.
Right.
Like, just like that just feels so...
Clear. Well, and also if you look at like even like Soviet era like propaganda art where you have like the men together who have like beautifully fine feminine features.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's like men raising children. And it's so queer.
Yes.
But it's like there's no adult women in it. It's all these children and two men together.
Right.
And it's like this thing of like, very queer, but it's communist, so it's like it's not.
Yeah.
But it's a very strange thing.
Yeah. It's almost like it's come full circle almost.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there would never be an admittance that this is queer or this is whatever. Again, like I think very, very, very homophobic regimes simultaneously. but yeah. also at the core is saying a lot of the same things. It's very interesting.
Well, like in Korean culture, it's like we're very separatist. So it's like women have their society, men have their society, and they're very split off. But it's a very homophobic culture. Mm-hmm. Yet the women are with the women, the men are with the men. And when we interact, it's like usually for like marriage or procreation.
Right.
But it's not, it's like we don't have friends who are other genders. You're uh-huh. only friends with your women friends. You're only friends with your male friends. Like it's a very separated uh-huh. thing. It's weird.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if this is real or not. I want to believe that it is. But so during my puppeteering days, et cetera, I had this puppeteer person that I met, whatever, and was like enamored with, was sharing with me how he had done some sort of fellowship where he was traveling on the world to just different like local theater communities mm-hmm. and especially like traveling theater communities to just like study it, whatever. And while he was in Turkey, there was like this, I don't know, this like full-on town there had this situation where, again, like very, very gendered, all the men would leave for work during the day and then all the women would just stay at home and like raise children, cook for each other, like, you know, communal babysitting, et cetera, and also just like have sex with each other. Mm. And none of them thought of it as like
that ain't
queer
gay.
At all. No, it was just like it was just like we take care of each other, including sex. But
that
we're
ain't gay.
100- yeah.
Like it's like like that's just the funniest. You know, we're having sex with other women, but it's like, that ain't gay.
It's not gay.
That's
no,
the best.
Like, we're just like, you know, I wash her clothes.
Yeah,
I, like,
it's practical.
Eat her out, whatever.
Yeah, it's like, whatever.
Like,
that's not gay.
Yeah, she like made dinner for me and my kids.
Yeah.
And also like, we scissored.
I love it.
Like,
I mean, it's like, that's the gayest part. I mean, it's like the casualness of that
yes.
is the gayest part.
100%. 100%.
That this just happens is like, and that it's not labeled as gay is the gayest
Nothing
part
gayer
of it.
Than that.
That is great.
Yeah.
I think it's true.
It's beautiful.
I think it's totally beautiful. And I think it's really real. It's weird. Like sometimes like that all like kind of blows up in my face though. Like, I have always these straight friends who are super sexual with me, like, because they're just, they know that I'm queer, so they're like always like hands mm-hmm. on me or whatever. And when I was younger, I would like make a move and they'd be super freaked out, go, oh no, like, you know, like get
yeah.
up. And I'm like, bitch, I fucking, you know, like I'm like
yeah,
so mad,
right? Well, it's, I feel like it's, were they primarily like straight friends?
Yeah
I feel like there's like that kind of straight voyeurism
mm-hmm.
where it's like, oh, like, let me see. But maybe it's like their own internalized like homophobia or something too,
yeah.
where it's like, oh, I'm curious or I want to
yeah.
find out or whatever. But if like it were to be reciprocated, like, oh
super
my God.
Super freaked out.
Yes.
Like, I don't feel that way. And it's like so stupid because it's almost like I felt pressured into making a move because you were so aggressive with me.
Right.
In public.
Yeah.
And then so when I do it in private, now it's a problem.
Yeah.
You know? And it's super weird. It's like, okay, like, I didn't want to do this, but you kept on pushing me, and so I kept thinking, like, oh, I guess I should.
Uh-huh.
I felt obligated.
Yeah.
Like, or my gayness, it's like, gayness engaged.
For
like,
sure.
Well,
I think there's also,
it.
Like, a sexualizing of gayness, too, by,
right.
like, straight people, too.
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh, gay, like, that just means you're, like, a super, super sexual person.
Yeah.
All the time, always sex, sex, sex.
Yeah, like, it's, and it's not like that, but that's
no.
what they just put on you because they think that's what your identity is.
Right, yeah.
Or that's when they made a fantasy of what your identity might be.
Yeah.
Which is such a, it's so crazy.
For sure.
It's so crazy. I am excited that our queer representation on TV, you and Joel.
Aww.
Beautiful siblings.
It's so funny. Every scene that we have together, we do the scene and we like love each other so much. We're just like all over each other.
Yeah.
And basically every scene they have to be like, okay, loved that take. Can we just try another one where like maybe there's less touching?
Oh, it's so cute.
Of the siblings.
That's so
and we're
cute.
Like, okay.
I love it. I love him and you guys are really great siblings together. And it is, it reminds me of Amy Poehler and Will Arnett in Blades of Glory. Because they're siblings in that. And they're always making out.
Uh-huh.
It's really funny. But, and I love Cal Penn.
Yeah. Cal's such a sweetheart.
He's awesome.
Such a sweetheart. Nicest guy.
Old school Democrat. Old school political guy. Super, like, I mean, quit showbiz to work for Obama at the White House. Last time I saw him,
100% the real deal.
Yeah, the real deal. Like, I saw him at the White House with a clipboard.
Yeah.
Just like, okay, you know, like, I mean, he's serious. Like, this is his life.
Yeah.
You know, and I went and I taught his, gave a lecture when he was teaching at Penn.
Mm-hmm.
And it was he's so great. He's such a great...
What was the lecture on?
It was on Asian American representation in the media.
Oh, cool.
And in television. And this was in the era before, like, Crazy Rich Asians and Fresh Off the Boat. So you had a different sort of sense of, like, what was going on and what's happening.
For sure. So I mean, at that time, it was, like, literally just, like, you and Cal and, like, three other people.
Yeah.
Holding it down. Do you feel like you, like... just with your career timelines that you've like come up together in a certain way or that you've like watched each other grow.
Yeah. And also really flourish. And, you know, Cal's taken a very different path from John, but they're both amazing guys. Well, where can people find out about your everything? I know you're Poppy Republic on Insta. What about the Twitters and stuff?
I really don't know how to tweet. I truly don't. I mean, like, I'm on it, but I, like, Twitter and I haven't really figured out each other yet.
Well, Poppy is also the star of Mercy Mistress, which is a web series that I produced, and it's great, and she's so hot. And it's about an Asian American dom in New York, and it's based on the true memoirs of our friend who, you know, they did a great job with the series, and we had such a great fun putting it out there. So you can see Poppy really is a very different side than Sunnyside. It's the not Sunnyside.
It's really sweet. Mercy Mistress still comes up a lot. Like, people just like reach out and be like, I am like a closeted kink person.
Aww.
And this is so special. And like, do you have like any like resources or anything, because I want to explore this.
Good.
Like, you know, like, I haven't seen anything else like this out there
ever.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get to make more, but
yes.
I love you. Thank you so much for joining
me.
I love you,
Margaret.
Thank you, Poppy.
Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The Margaret Show is an Erio's production, with editing by Kat Hong and original music by Garrison Starr.
Erio's.
Powered by Acast.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.